A1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Dan Novak, Anna Mateo, and Jill Robbins. Later, Ashley and I will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
American President Joe Biden said Monday that the United States would intervene militarily if China were to invade Taiwan. At a news conference in Tokyo with Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, Biden said yes when a reporter asked if he was willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if China invaded. "That's the commitment we made," he said. The president added, "We agree with a one-China policy. We've signed on to it, and all the intended agreements made from there. But the idea that it can be taken by force, just taken by force, is just not appropriate." Under the One China policy, the U.S. recognizes the government in Beijing as the only government of China. It does not have diplomatic relations with Taiwan. However, the U.S. maintains unofficial contacts, including an office in Taipei, the capital, and supplies military equipment for the island's defense. Biden also noted that the duty to protect Taiwan is even stronger after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The president's comments were among the most forceful presidential statements in support of the self-governing territory. The U.S. traditionally has maintained a policy called strategic ambiguity about how far it would be willing to go if China invaded Taiwan. The 1979 Taiwan Relations Act has governed U.S. relations with the island. It does not require the U.S. to intervene militarily to defend Taiwan if China invades. But the treaty says American policy is to ensure Taiwan has the resources to defend itself. A White House official said Biden's comments did not represent a change in policy. But the president's comments received sharp criticism from China, which claims Taiwan as part of the country. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said China will take firm action to safeguard its sovereignty and security interests, and we will do what we say. In recent years, China has increased its military activities close to the island. Last week, China sent 14 aircraft into Taiwan's air defense zone on the day that Biden arrived in Asia. Taiwan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson, Joanne Oh, expressed sincere welcome and gratitude for Biden's comments. She added, Taiwan will continue to improve its self-defense capabilities and deepen cooperation with the United States and Japan and other like-minded countries. It is not the first time Biden has said the U.S. will defend Taiwan. In a CNN town hall broadcast in October, Biden was asked about using the U.S. military to defend Taiwan and replied, "Yes, we have a commitment to do that." Biden's comments came just before he launched an Indo-Pacific trade deal with 12 countries in the Asia-Pacific. The countries joining the U.S. in the agreement are Australia, Brunei, India, Indonesia, Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, New Zealand, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. Along with the United States, they represent 40% of world GDP. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan confirmed Sunday that Taiwan is not among the governments signed up for the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. He said the U.S. wants to deepen its economic partnership with Taiwan on a one-to-one basis. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Companies that collect data from people online often know their most sensitive health information. They can find that information through web searches and tracking programs. Privacy experts now fear this information could be used to spy on pregnant women if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, the court's 1973 ruling protecting the right to end a pregnancy. For now, the data is mostly used to target advertising, like baby products shown to pregnant women. But the information could become evidence in a criminal case, and it is something that worries those who support a woman's right to end a pregnancy, or abortion. The value of these tools for law enforcement is for how they really get to peek into the soul, said Cynthia Conti Cook. She is a Ford Foundation technology expert. In public, there are security cameras, license plate readers, and other tools to record people's movements. And the technology has gotten far ahead of the laws that govern them. Laws in the U.S. are far behind those passed in Europe in 2018. Vice News found that until this month, anyone could get data on clients at more than 600 Planned Parenthood offices around the country for as little as $160. Planned Parenthood is a nonprofit provider of health care, including abortions. The information included probable patient addresses, earning levels, time spent at the health provider, and the top places people visited before and afterward. That is possible because the current law protects privacy in the doctor's office, but not information that mobile devices and tech companies collect. Some American states are starting to push back, setting limits on tools that gather this information. The state of Massachusetts, through a legal settlement, stopped a Boston company from sending anti-abortion advertising to women inside health offices that offer abortion services. In Michigan, voters changed the state constitution to require police to get a warrant before searching someone's data. And in California, voters passed a digital privacy law that lets people delete the data that companies collect about them. Still, the responsibility to protect one's privacy lies mainly with the user, who must understand complex data agreements and policies. The rising concerns have forced Apple, Google, and other tech companies to add measures limiting the sale of consumer data. That includes Apple's launch of its app tracking transparency feature, which lets users block apps from tracking them. Abortion rights activists suggest that people in conservative states leave their phones at home or turn off location services when seeking health care. They also advise studying the privacy policies of health apps they use. Nathan Freed Wessler is with the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. He said there are very, very few people who have the savvy to do everything needed to protect themselves. I'm Dan Novak.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Some people might think that growing plants without much sun is a difficult, if not impossible, task. With little sunlight, gardeners may think they are faced with limited plant choices and no possibility for color. However, that is not the case, says Jessica Damiano. She is a gardening expert for the Associated Press and recently shared suggestions on growing plants in low-light conditions, or shade. Damiano says you just need to learn how to work with shady conditions. And, she adds, finding the right plants for the right places can make all the difference.
The first step is understanding the type of shade you have. This is based on the amount of time that sun shines on the area. She describes the three main types of shade. They are part shade, 3 to 6 hours of direct sun, usually in the morning, full shade, less than 3 hours of direct sun, and deep shade. Sunlight rarely, if ever, gets through trees or past structures like buildings. When sunlight shines through overhead tree branches and leaves, it creates an area with both light and shade. The light only falls in certain small areas and is called dappled.
After you choose the planting area, observe the light it gets during an entire day. Note how many hours of direct sunlight reaches the ground. If you are still uncertain, buy a sunlight meter. Damiano says this device can cost as little as $20. Place the light meter in the planting area for a full day, and then read the results. When you know your shade conditions, find plants that suit them. This information is available where plants and seeds are sold. You can also research that information online, in books or magazines. Experts at gardening stores are other sources of information. And don't forget about your local gardeners. When walking around a community garden or your neighborhood, take note of plants growing in shady areas. Talk to the gardeners. Learn about their successes and failures.
Damiano says there are things to know about caring for a shade garden. For example, shady gardens usually take longer to warm up in spring. They also stay cooler on hot summer days. As a result, they will likely require more fertilizer or plant food. Also, they usually need less water. This is because the dirt stays wetter longer after a rainfall or watering than it does in full sun. However, if the shade is caused by large trees directly overhead, some types of plants may need to be watered more often. So, she suggests that gardeners pay close attention to that.
She suggests adding a lot of compost to the soil at planting time. This will increase the amount of water the soil can hold. Compost will also add high-quality nutrients. And if the area has hard clay, compost will improve its drainage. Clay is a type of hard earth that drains water poorly. Damiano also says to add material or mulch to the surface of the plant bed. This helps keep the soil wet and healthy. Deep shade is the most challenging for gardeners. If you garden in a 3- or 4-season climate, where deciduous trees block the summer sun, take advantage of springtime conditions by planting bulbs. They will grow into a colorful spring show before the trees become too leafy.
The gardening expert adds that painting nearby structures white reflects sunlight. Glass and mirrored objects can also reflect light around the garden. If possible, carefully cut some tree branches. This is to prune, and it lets more sunlight reach the ground. Damiano says to research the low-light plants suitable for your area. She also says to not give up on growing plants you can eat. Vegetables like tomatoes and peppers need a lot of sun, but leafy greens actually grow better in part shade. Asian greens, arugula, cilantro, spinach, and kale all grow well in dappled two-part shade.
As for pests, Damiano says that some, like slugs and snails, like shade gardens. But most other pests are less of a problem in low-light conditions. She also suggests another good thing about shady gardens. You will sweat less while gardening. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Our national parks journey continues with one of the most popular and beautiful places in America, Grand Canyon National Park in the state of Arizona. The Grand Canyon is one of the 7 natural wonders of the world and one of the largest canyons on Earth. It stretches for 450 kilometers. Parts of the canyon are more than 30 kilometers wide and 1 kilometer deep. Many writers have tried to describe the wonder of the Grand Canyon. They use words like mysterious, overpowering, and strange. But it is not possible to put human meaning to such a place. The Grand Canyon truly is beyond words.
Is this your first time at the Grand Canyon?
Yes.
And what do you think? Do you have a few words to describe it?
Beautiful. Amazing.
What do you think of the Grand Canyon?
Oh, very huge and very colorful.
Do you have some words to describe what you're seeing?
Amazing. It's so amazing when I see it at the first look.
The canyons of America's Southwest are deep, ancient openings in the earth. They look as if they formed as the earth split apart. In reality, rivers formed these canyons. 40 million years ago, the Colorado River began cutting through the area around the present-day Grand Canyon. The river carried dirt and pieces of stone that slowly ate away at the surrounding rock. It left a pathway of enormous rock openings. At the same time, forces deep within the earth pushed up the surrounding land. Rain, snow, ice, wind, and plant roots rubbed away at the top of this new canyon. Below, the river continued to uncover more and more levels of ancient rock. Some of the exposed rocks along the Grand Canyon's walls are nearly 2 billion years old. They are among the oldest rocks on Earth, with many levels of granite, schist, limestone, and sandstone.
The Grand Canyon measures 2,500 meters from the canyon floor to its highest point. Because of its size, the weather at the top of the canyon is often much different from the bottom. On some winter days, for example, you may find cold winds and snow at the top. But at the bottom of the canyon, you may find warm winds and flowers. The Grand Canyon is home to some 2,000 plant species. Some of these species can only be found in the park. The park is also home to more than 370 species of birds, 90 kinds of mammals, and 40 kinds of reptiles. Many of the birds spend their whole lives in the Grand Canyon. Other species depend on the Grand Canyon for food and shelter during large migrations. The Grand Canyon was named a globally important bird area in 2014 because of the role it plays in protecting many species of birds.
Native Americans occupied the Grand Canyon 3,000 years ago. Bones, hair, feathers, and the remains of plants have been found in deep, dry caves high in the rock walls. The Hopi, Paiute, Navajo, and other Native American tribes have all been in the area for at least 700 years. In 1869, American John Wesley Powell explored the Grand Canyon. He recorded much of what we know today about the area. Powell and his group traveled in 4 boats along the Colorado River. He and his group of explorers knew very little about getting over the fast, rocky waters of the Colorado River. In many places, boats could be turned over by giant waves. Soon after they started their journey, Powell's group lost some of its food and equipment. 3 members decided to leave the group. As they walked up and out of the Grand Canyon, they were killed by Native Americans. The rest of Powell's group survived the journey. Starved and tired, Powell and his group reached the end of the canyon. They had traveled by boat down the Colorado for more than 3 months. John Wesley Powell's reports and maps from the trip greatly increased interest in the Grand Canyon. But visitors did not begin to go there in large numbers until 1901. That year, a railway was built that reached the area.
Five million people visit the Grand Canyon every year. The first sight of the canyon can leave visitors speechless. Depending on the time of day, the sun lights up the rock walls in red, orange, and golden colors. The bright colors are the result of minerals in the rock. Their appearance changes endlessly with the light, the time of year, and the weather. At sunset, the canyon walls display fiery red and gold hues. Then they take on softer colors of blue, purple, and green. Most visitors walk along paths partway down the canyon. It takes several hours to walk to the bottom and even longer to climb back up. Some visitors choose to ride mules to the bottom of the canyon. Mules are strong, sturdy animals that look similar to horses. Visitors can also explore the Grand Canyon in other ways. Hundreds of thousands of people see the canyon by air each year. They pay a helicopter or airplane pilot to fly them above and around the canyon. Thousands of people every year choose to explore the Grand Canyon by boat from the Colorado River. These trips last 1 to 3 weeks.
Most people who come to the Grand Canyon National Park visit an area known as the South Rim. That area has shuttle buses that take visitors to overlooks. Fewer people see the canyon from the North Rim. The North Rim is less than 20 kilometers across the canyon from the South Rim, but visitors must drive more than 350 kilometers by car from the South Rim to access the North Rim. Visitors can also see the Grand Canyon from a huge glass walkway called the Skywalk. The Skywalk is on the Hualapai Indian Reservation in the western part of the canyon. The Hualapai Indians built it to increase tourism at the reservation. It opened in 2007. The Skywalk extends more than 20 meters from the canyon's rim. It is suspended more than 1,200 meters above the bottom of the canyon and is shaped like a giant horseshoe. Many call the Skywalk an engineering wonder, but others have criticized the Skywalk and its development. They say it reduces the enjoyment of nature in the Grand Canyon. For visitors hoping to get a view of the entire Grand Canyon, they will have to travel well beyond the state of Arizona. The only place to see the entire canyon at once is from outer space.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.